This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. He joins us live in studio, and it's good to see you. You've been on a bit of a sabbatical vacation, and hope you had a good time.
Was on vacation last week. We went down to Hilton Head.
Nice. It
drives a little longer than I remembered, over 9 hours.
Yeah, it's a ways down
there.
It's a hike.
It's funny, you know, you go down there, you're on 95 most of the way.
Yeah. South of the border, Brian? South of the border?
We went flying by south of the border. It looks, didn't stop? I've never stopped. It looks bigger and better, though, I can
Brian.
Tell you. I think the sombrero has gotten bigger.
You never stopped? After all those billboards, you didn't stop?
It really makes me sick as I drive by that quay, I have to say. And, you know, the billboards certainly get you ready for it.
It's great for kids, though, because there's so much junk, you know, to buy. Little knickknacks.
No, we don't need that.
Firecrackers.
Yeah, just
M80s.
I have a van full of... our van was so full, I had to build a wooden rack the night before we left inside the van so I could create
give
a little...
Give another level of...
I had to create a new level inside the van for storage so that our dog would have as much real estate as my wife thinks our dog needs.
That's great. I can't believe you just ran by south of the border and didn't even stop.
We went by as
Come
quickly
on,
as
SA.
Possible.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, you do notice things about our community. I don't get out very much, but, you know, when I do, you notice other communities have a whole lot more billboards than we do. Thank goodness we don't have that kind of pollution on the highways and byways.
Yeah, there's a lot more of them all over. Because I spent a couple of years in Tampa Bay, Florida, and God, Brian, they're everywhere, billboards.
Now, Hilton Head, if you have not been there, has a serious design control regimen. In that, you know, when it comes to signs, they don't, I mean, you can hardly see a business sign out on the main road. They're tucked into the foliage.
So Arby's wouldn't be very happy.
Arby's would not be happy at all. Let's just put it that way. But it's interesting. They've obviously decided as a community, and I read a little bit of the history on it. One of the books I picked up, you know, while I was down there mentioned that the three or four developers that really made Hilton Head happen, you know, sort of got together and they got to write the rules from the beginning. And that was important to them. They said, we don't want to look like any place USA. We want to have a particular architectural style, and we want to avoid some of the clutter in signage that you see in other communities. So I'm not weighing in on the local debate. Yeah. I'm just saying Hilton Head is dramatically different.
Now, the libertarians won't like that, but I'm the first one to say sometimes it looks nice. You know? I mean, I don't necessarily like how you get there with this the government enforcement of these, you know, all these design control stuff, but when you're there, it's nice. You got to give them that. It's awfully pretty.
The signs that they do have up that I like have to do with conservation easements. They have a sign out on the road saying, you know, this 1.5 acres protected by a conservation easement from so-and-so.
Interesting.
And I think that's a pretty interesting thing to do, that it reminds people that local government can acquire easements or individual citizens can voluntarily say, I'm going to make sure this land is not developed.
Yeah.
And they have signs up announcing that. So that, you know, around here, unless you know who's given, you know, conservation easements, you might look at a farm and say, oh, it's a nice farm. I wonder if there will ever be development there. And you may not know the answer.
I wonder how you do that kind of signage here, because it's, where do you put a sign for a farm? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, you could put it along whatever the main road is nearby. And,
yeah.
So anyway,
because there's a bunch of that around
one,
here.
One
isn't
sign
it?
Idea we might borrow from.
What was the hit of the beach trip? Was there any one moment?
Let's see.
Are you like me, where it takes you two or three days at the beach to actually where you sort of feel yourself going, like it's like the third or fourth day you actually do finally relax?
I don't think I relax. Unfortunately, I think my family did. My wife Jean said the funnest time she had was in the nature preserve that we hiked through.
Ooh, cool!
They have about 600 acres set aside.
Wow!
As a nature preserve, and so that was a lot of fun. But you know, we spent time at the beach, at the pool. We went kayaking in the little sort of inlet inside of Hilton Head, and that was a lot of fun.
Dolphins came right up to
the kayaks.
Yeah. Really?
That was neat.
Wow, that is pretty cool. You can touch them and stuff?
That was probably my highlight. No, we didn't touch them, but they were like 10 feet away.
Very cool. So did you have any pie when you were down there?
I did not, but of course I did have pie right before I left, because one of the last things on my to-do list before I left was put pie on Coy's doorstep.
Yeah, you did. And I came home and there's a note and a little Tupperware container literally on my stoop at my house.
And I set
with pie.
I put like a birdhouse or something on top of it.
That's a butterfly house.
Butterfly house.
My mom gave me that before she died, yeah.
I think you have a cat?
I have two outdoor cats.
There was, yeah, and the cats were staring at this Tupperware of shoe fly pie, and my concern was you were never going to see the shoe fly pie, so I put a box on top of it.
Yeah,
but that shoe fly pie came from Pennsylvania after you and I talked about it on the radio. Kathy Smith, neighbor.
Kathy, thank you, Kathy.
Kathy Smith called in on the radio and talked about shoe fly pie. Said she knew what it was, and she had a friend bring down two variations. We had the dry bottom and the wet bottom shoe fly pies.
Was the dry bottom the black one that tasted like cake?
No, I think that was the wet bottom, ironically.
Interesting.
The other one was wetter, though. I remember the one that she labeled wet seemed more dry, and the one that was dry seemed more wet.
I like the wet one, the sort of brown one.
I like the other one, the cake-like one.
Yeah.
So I make molasses cookies. That's good. My favorite cookie.
Yeah.
So this tasted like molasses cookie cake.
Yeah. So really they were good. Both delicious. I ate every bit of both huge pieces. It was delicious. Kathy, thank you. And my stomach thanks you. It was delicious. What's the latest on this pie thing coming up? Somebody asked me today. We were talking about it, and I couldn't remember the details. There's a big Charlottesville Pie Festival
right. Coming
up in Crozet.
In Crozet.
And you and I are both going to be there.
I believe it's Saturday, October 3rd.
Saturday, October 3rd.
And we are judges. Did
at
you
the
see
Mud House in Charlottesville.
Delegate Toscano
in
is now Crozet. A judge.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
So the judges,
I didn't
the list
know that.
Is
I
growing.
Saw him today. I should have mentioned that.
I haven't looked at the list recently, but if you go to SevillePieFest.com.
I'm going
to
do it right now.
I believe they have a list of judges.
SevillePieFest.com. All right. I'm going to go there right now.
So that's going to be an opportunity where people in the community can bake pies and enter them in this contest. And then judges such as Coy Barefoot and Brian Wheeler will taste them and somehow render our opinion about
there
them.
There it is, SevillePieFest.com. The judges are me. There's a bunch of judges. You? I don't see David on here. David Toscano.
He's a new entry.
Okay. Molly Cox Bryan. She is the author of... I heard an interview with her recently, and I need to have her on this program because she just wrote a cookbook and a history of Mrs. Rouse.
Oh.
Yeah. Mrs. Excellent. Rouse's Little Book of Southern Pies.
Well, if you write a book like that, you should be on this panel.
Jim Duncan, who's a regular guest on this program.
Realtor from Crozet.
Yeah. Amy Eastlack, managing editor of Susie Said Charlottesville. What's that?
I'm not sure.
We'll find out. Barbara Hutchinson of the Charlottesville Albemarle Airport.
All right.
Elizabeth McCullough of Writer House.
So a lot of those people are the people plugged into...
the pie scene?
The Twitter scene.
The Twitter scene.
And the Facebook scene.
Because this was born via Twitter.
Born via Twitter.
This is a tweet creation.
That's correct.
Yeah. This is a tweet baby.
In fact, I've never talked to anybody on the phone who's organizing this. I just know via Twitter and this website that I'm
what
involved.
What if we show up nobody's there?
I think people
like
will be
scam.
There.
It's like a scam.
I think people will be there.
I think it's going to be packed.
Get your recipes ready. And
anybody can enter a pie?
I think so.
All right. There you go. You just click on participate.
Yeah.
So there you go.
What does it say?
It says, as a baker, the Pie Fest won't happen without pie makers. All you have to do is bring your best pie and let the judges try it out.
Wow.
They're also looking for sponsors. It's SevillePieFest.com, October 3rd at the Mud House in Crozet. Be
it's
there,
be
square.
Fun.
Bring your palette. It's going to be fantastic.
Because, you know, it was a year ago that we did Pie Day. It was August 8th, 2008.
Yeah.
And Charlottesville Tomorrow went all around the county.
I remember that. I remember when y'all came in here.
In the search for good pie.
And you chose the peach pie.
From Child's Peach
from
Orchard.
From Child's Peach Orchard. There you go. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We'll continue this conversation in just a couple of minutes. We're talking with Brian Wheeler. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. And after a break coming up here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather, Brian, we'll talk in detail to get your response to some criticism that has been leveled against you as you have been away Some folks have been talking, and
my ears are burning, Coy.
Indeed, and you have been criticized. Charlottesville Tomorrow has been criticized. Michael Bills on your board, and also a trustee of the Nature Conservancy, has been criticized regarding the water supply plan debate. So we'll hear some audio, and we'll get your response coming up in just a few minutes. We'll open up the phone lines as well. But before we do all of that, you have some news that some folks in Albemarle County need to know about very quickly.
We've talked about on the show land use in Albemarle County. That's a tax break that you can get on land used for livestock, for forestry, for open space. There are various requirements that let people pay a reduced property tax on their real estate. Now, your house and the immediate land right around the house pays the full rate, but then your acreage out in the pasture, the forest, whatever, can pay a reduced rate. And the county, that reduces the county's tax revenues, I think, by about $18 million. I think that's the right number.
Yeah.
And what's happening now—
And most of that land and land use in Albemarle County is forest.
I believe
so. The vast
so.
Majority, yeah. Like three-fourths of that.
I don't remember the exact percentage.
I think it's 60, 70-something percent.
But as you know, back in October, the Board of Supervisors approved what's called a revalidation program. And what's happened is people will now need to fill out a revalidation form to explain why their land should still be viewed as being in land
why
use.
Why are you getting a huge tax cut and the rest of us are paying for it?
Right. Now, this form is not complicated. The Farm Bureau and others were involved in helping make it as simple as possible, so it wasn't a big burden for people to fill out. And what I learned today from Lee Catlin, the county spokesperson, is that less than half the people who are currently on the land use program have filled out this form. The deadline is September 1st, 2009. So that deadline's looming. Less than half the people have filled it out. And so your next question is probably, well, what happens if they don't fill it out? After September 1st, there is a late fee of $125, but that's not the real kicker. After December 5th, 2009, if you've not come into compliance and filled out this revalidation form, then the county will assume that you no longer want to be in the program, which is fine, except then you will start paying a higher tax rate. And in fact, you will pay 5 years of back taxes plus interest on that property.
Ooh, Lord almighty.
I guess
half the people haven't even come forward yet? They only have a few days?
Less than half have come forward at this point.
So if your land is in land use, hello. So what do they need to do?
They
call
need
Lee
to
Catlin?
Go to the county website. Do not call Lee Catlin. Go to the county website, albemarle.org, and on the very front page there, they have a headline that says Land Use Revalidation Deadline Approaching. And you can click on that and get more information.
Wow. So they get, but it's a. It doesn't sound like it's too hard.
It's not supposed
to keep
be.
Your land in land use.
I have not filled one out myself. I'm not eligible.
And most of the people are just going to click, I got forestry.
Well, and with
most people don't have cattle.
It mentions here that with forestry in particular, you need to submit either a forest management plan or complete what they call a landowner forest commitment form. Now, I don't know what those two things look like, but apparently there have been a lot of questions related to that forestry item. How are you going to you can't just have forest.
Yeah.
You have to have a plan as to how that's going to be managed.
I'm growing
as a resource.
This number of acres of this kind of tree for this purpose.
Right.
Would be like I think so. Somewhat of a plan.
So they've been
not
having,
just I got woods. You know, so I should pay less taxes.
Ken Boyd with the Board of Supervisors has had a town meeting recently where they tried to answer questions about this. They're trying to put the word out, and I thought I would give it some attention.
There you go. That's keep bringing that up because that's really important. A lot of folks out there, we don't want them catching up on them, getting a nasty tax bill. But if your land is in land use, and it should be in land use, then you need to let the county know. If you've been scamming the system and taking advantage of it and it's got no reason to be in land use, then, well, good luck.
I found the numbers here, Coy. Number of taxable parcels in the entire county as of 2008 is about 41,000. So of all the parcels, 41,000. The parcels in the land use program is about 5,000.
What's a parcel?
A piece of property.
So
on a tax map.
Okay.
You know.
So it could. So would a farm be multiple parcels?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. And then that was a question that came up. You know, how do you determine what value came out of which parcel? And they'll help you figure that out.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the percent of county acreage in the land use program is about 60%. And the taxes deferred because of land use, $18.78 million in 2008.
Money the county is not getting.
Money the county is not getting, and further, that is not reflected in the revenue sharing agreement. The revenue sharing agreement with the city of Charlottesville expects the county is based on the full value of this property and not the land use value. You follow me?
No, say that one more time.
The number that determines the check that goes to the city of Charlottesville,
yes,
it's about 10 cents on the tax rate,
yeah,
in the county, is based on the full value of the property in the county, not the land use value, the reduced value.
That's not right.
So $18 million goes...
That means we send more money to the city based on money that we don't get.
Bing, 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 bing.
That's not right.
I'm just telling you the facts, Coy.
That's a scam. Oh, man. More scams coming up. After a break for local news and weather, this is Charlottesville Right Now, 4-3.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
The thrill of victory. And the agony of defeat.
Something's happened to my brain. It's all dried up.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
Can we all get along? Can we get along?
Too many good docs are getting out of business. Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
Minutes after 5 o'clock here in Central Virginia on this Tuesday afternoon. I hope you're doing well, having a great week. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Coy Barefoot. This is Charlottesville Right Now. It's News Radio 1070 WINA. It's about 80 degrees here in God's country. Happy Tuesday. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Ed Murphy, astronomer from the University of Virginia. He'll tell us about his trip to China with the University of Virginia Cavalier Travels Program. See the big, my mind just went blank. What's that called?
Telescope?
No, what's it called?
I'm sorry, I heard you mention an
when
astronomer.
When the sun blocks out?
Eclipse.
Eclipse, thank you. See, you hit 40, and all of a sudden words don't come as quickly as they used to. And you start going, damn, I know that word, but what is it? Ah, the big.
That happened to me at 30, Coy.
The big eclipse of the 21st century, the last big one, and he saw it. And he's going to tell us all about it and China and the great group that he traveled with. And looking forward to that. Ed Murphy tomorrow on Charlottesville Right Now. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, for our Tuesday growth and development discussion. Before we talk about the water issue, you said there's something going on in beautiful downtown Crozet.
Crozet is in the middle of revisiting their master plan. Of course, that master plan was approved in 2004, and every 5 years, a master plan in Albemarle County gets reviewed. That process kicked off over this summer. They're having public meetings right now, and the Crozet Community Advisory Council and Albemarle County teamed up on a questionnaire. And what I thought was interesting, Coy, was 700 people filled out this questionnaire, which is a lot.
Wow, that is a pretty good return.
Crozet's got about 5,300 residents in the growth area. But the number one concern of residents, according to this survey, again, not scientific, but just the 700 people.
The future of Crozet Pizza?
That got in, if that was on the list, I'm sure it would have ranked pretty high. I would have filled that in, the write-in vote.
Yeah. Oh, so they gave you a list you had to check.
I believe so. I haven't looked at the survey instrument, but, and I typically don't do this with non-scientific surveys, but this is an important public policy issue.
Was it a county thing, a county survey?
The county and the Crozet Community Advisory Council. Every master plan that the county is doing now creates an advisory council to help give the county feedback about how the plan implementation is going. So the number one concern has to do with future population limits. This is according to the Crozet Gazette. You can find this at CrozetGazette.com in the current issue. Mike Marshall has written this up. And the number two concern was the safety of the water supply was a close runner-up.
The safety of water supply being Beaver Creek, if you're
Beaver
in Crozet.
Beaver Creek Reservoir in Crozet.
Which my dog was swimming in this weekend, by the way.
And you'll remember, Coy, early on in my tenure on your show, we talked a lot about population in Crozet because that was the master plan in 2004. Many people who signed on to that agreement and were involved in the creation of the master plan believed that it set a cap, in essence, on the population in Crozet of about 12,000 or 12,500 people.
Yeah.
Shortly after the Old Trail Village rezoning was approved, the county used a little more sophisticated analysis.
That was it.
Calculated a new acronym. I tried to get started, but
they changed the number on it.
Nobody started using this acronym, which was something like Total Ultimate Build Out Population Tubo or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, they came up with a new ultimate potential build out population for Crozet. That number was about 24,000.
Yeah. So they doubled the total population in Crozet after Old Trail Village came to them. But what's been the result of Old Trail Village? There's a lot of empty places out there and a lot of empty land.
A lot of empty land. And, you know, that's part of, you know, the downturn in the economy and the housing market that we're seeing right now. Other parts of Old Trail are coming together. The pool out there, the town center.
It's looking good. I just drove past that the other day.
It's got some roundabouts. You know, you like those.
I love those. Absolutely.
Hilton Head. We were talking about Hilton Head. Big traffic circles in Hilton Head.
You don't need these red light cameras. You need traffic circles.
Now, Coy, somebody called me and said, don't let Coy bring up red light cameras again.
I'll tell you what, if I start talking about red light cameras.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Yeah, let's talk about red light cameras.
So anyway, we're going to skip that subject. Crozet population, water, I think those are two interesting topics. We'll certainly keep an eye on them, but I just wanted to draw attention to the Crozet Gazette and their coverage.
So are they going to tear down all those buildings where Crozet Pizza is? I know I've asked you this before, but people ask me that.
I haven't gotten an update on that recently, so I'm
because wasn't that the plan at some point?
Out of the loop.
From the Crozet Pizza little strip there all the way back to the grocery store, they were going to level all of that.
That was going to be redeveloped.
And build a huge new shopping center.
And my recollection of that is they scaled back the plan to have it focus more on the shopping center side initially.
And leave those older buildings.
But I don't quote me on that.
Yeah. How old are those buildings?
Very old.
Because
they were involved in the fruit industry in Crozet.
No kidding. That's what they were there for?
Absolutely.
Really? So the farmers would bring all the produce down there?
Well, one of the things the developer said was, you know, it would be hard to preserve those buildings because they don't have an adequate foundation under them.
Yeah. They're more like shacks.
Right.
You know, that were just thrown up, I guess, for the produce.
But they're certainly
That's
attractive.
That's great.
They're
but
the iconic.
Then they're historic because that was the epicenter of the, you know, the apple production here in Albemarle County.
Well, in fact, they were looking at creating a historic district in Crozet, and that plan was on the table at the time. And they said, well, if this plan goes forward, there really isn't any need for a historic district in Crozet because most of it will have been gone.
Yeah. So hopefully they'll keep those.
But I don't have an update. I'll look into that. So anyway, that's what Crozet's up to with their concerns about population and water.
Good deal. Brian, when you were out of town and you were away, we had some folks on the program, Dee Dee Smith and Richard Lloyd, who took issue with your reporting on the water issue and basically criticized Charlottesville Tomorrow and your work as being biased in favor of the water supply plan and basically working aggressively to make the argument that we need to do this water supply plan. We need to follow the RSWA, the water board. It's easy for me to remember the water board. At any rate, Richard Lloyd was on the program last Thursday, and I'll play a clip that he had to say, and a few remarks he had to say, and then we'll get your response.
You look at Charlottesville Tomorrow and Brian Wheeler's articles that are on Charlottesville Tomorrow now, it shows that the Nature Conservancy has a Michael Bills, who is a trustee of the Nature Conservancy of Virginia, is also the chairman of and chief contributor to, I think chief contributor to, Charlottesville Tomorrow. And now Charlottesville Tomorrow has come out with what I believe is a very partisan approach. It has nothing to do with dredging. It's all to do with the community water plan. They don't address the debate. They address the community water plan unilaterally. There's no comments on the benefits of dredging.
So there's Richard Lloyd's comments when he was on the program last Thursday. And folks, you can hear that full interview with Dee Dee Smith and Richard Lloyd at SeavillePodcast.com. And as in the efforts of full disclosure, I should point out that folks know I also work at the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership at UVA. Very proud to do so. Michael Bills was also one of the co-founders of Sorensen, where I work, even though he's no longer on the board. So don't have a working relationship with him. I know Michael. But you do have a working relationship with Michael Bills.
I do.
He's your boss on the board.
Michael's the chairman of the Charlottesville Tomorrow Board of Directors. And, you know, I guess a couple things that I think about when I hear Mr. Lloyd express a concern about that. You know, by way of disclosure, I hope Mr. Lloyd during that show pointed out what board memberships he has. Mr. Lloyd is on the board of Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, and that website is stopgrowthasap.org. Now, I don't have any problem with ASAP or their members and or their board for that matter, but I think in the way of transparency, that's something he should have disclosed if he's going to call attention to our board members and their affiliations. Mr. Bills is the chair of the Virginia Nature Conservancy, and that has been on our website since we launched in 2005. We disclose the backgrounds and important positions like that of all our board members. And I would share Mr. Lloyd's concern if Charlottesville Tomorrow took a position on the water supply plan. The fact is, we don't. Now, Mr. Lloyd continued to say there, and this is the first time I've heard his remarks, that we didn't analyze the benefits of dredging. And that's correct, because that's in a future issue. What Mr. Lloyd is referring to is our publication. It's a six-part publication on the water supply plan, and we've released two issues. You can go to seavilletomorrow.org/water and find all of these issues. Two of them are out. The third one comes out this weekend. He mentions that all we're talking about is the plan. Actually, I've hardly started talking about the plan. That's the next issue. So the next issue, we're going to talk about the 2006 plan, what the supporters of that plan. And again, we're not a supporter of any plan at all. Our goal as an organization is to get the best information out there for the public to consume, make up their own mind about it. If there was a concern about us being involved with the Nature Conservancy, then again, if we were taking the positions, I think that would be a valid criticism. But at every opportunity where we've been sending out, for example, action alerts on the water supply, we've done that twice. And in neither case did we endorse one specific plan or another.
So you can categorically say here and now that Michael Bills has never sat you down and said, Brian, this is how I need you to report on the water issue so that it will benefit my efforts over at the Nature Conservancy.
Yeah, no board member has ever said that to me about any issue. And I think, you know, one of the things that unites our board is that they check at the door their outside affiliations, whether it's political or related to an organization they work with. Also on our board, Tony Vanderwalker, he's on the board of the Piedmont Environmental Council. Rick Middleton, he runs the Southern Environmental Law Center. Kathy Train runs the United Way. Terry Sieg sells wine and beer in the community. Steve McLean is a realtor. Joe Barnes is one of the developers at Bundoran Farm, a development south of Charlottesville. So we have a pretty diverse board. There are others I didn't mention. And all of them have that unique ability, I think, to focus on what's the mission of this organization? And again, our mission is to get information out there for the people to digest. I appreciate Mr. Lloyd looking over our work, but I would just ask him to wait for the dredging issue, which is issue number 4, I believe, of the 6.
Right. There's a whole series there available on the website. Answer me this, Brian, though, because it was interesting that Richard brought this up. The role of the Nature Conservancy. What is the Nature Conservancy, and how did they get so involved in writing this water supply plan for our community that we all are going to have to pay for, but not the Piedmont Environmental Council, not the Southern Environmental Law Center, not these other groups in our community that do fantastic work. How is it that the Nature Conservancy is at the table writing this water supply plan?
Well, the key point in their involvement, Coy, actually happened before Charlottesville Tomorrow was even formed, and that was in early 2005. And at the time, Ridge Schuyler, who was the field officer with the Nature Conservancy, worked with the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority to suggest a modified water supply plan. Originally, at the time, the RWSA was looking at, they were down to 4 alternatives. They had looked at over 30 water supply plan alternatives. They'd gotten that list down to 4, which included dredging at South Fork, putting a bladder on the South Fork Ravana Reservoir to raise the height there a little bit, or pipeline to the James River, and then, of course, a taller dam at Ragged Mountain.
Which they raised rates to do the bladder and never did it.
They did. That's correct, yeah. As far as I know.
Yeah.
Because I know that Kevin Lynch has critiqued them heavily for that ever since.
Yeah.
But anyway, there were four alternatives in early 2005. The Nature Conservancy was involved in, and actually what I learned in the course of preparing our next issue, issue number three, is that the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority had already asked that a modified proposal be investigated. That modified proposal is the plan that was approved in 2006 to connect our two reservoirs, South Fork, Ragged Mountain, with a new pipeline. Retire the old pipeline coming from Sugar Hollow down to Ragged Mountain. So RWSA had already initiated a study of that approach, but Ridge Skyler and the Nature Conservancy came in around May 2005 and said, hey, here's a win-win. And again, sometimes when you ask me these questions, I'm put in the position of having to give the point of view of these other players, because again, we're not taking a position. But so I just want to be careful with my language here. But from the point of view of the Nature Conservancy and many of those other environmental groups at the time, this was a win-win because it had environmental benefits in that stream flows were restored to the Mormons River and to the Ravenna for that matter, and natural stream flows. Because keep in mind, at Sugar Hollow, we've been diverting for 80 years, diverting water from up in the mountains to fill the Ragged Mountain Reservoir in Charlottesville. So this would let the water flow down the mountain through the Mormons to the South Fork and then be pumped from South Fork over to Ragged Mountain. So the environmental benefit is there. You get the natural flow back in the stream, which is good for aquatic life. So that was a key thing that the Nature Conservancy was interested in. They are a science-based organization focused on improving, the environment. And I can't really say any more about what their role is, but you could ask them. And actually, since Ridge has left, I haven't really heard a peep out of the Nature Conservancy about this proposal.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and Dee Dee Smith is on line one. She was with us last Thursday and had some words to say about the recent publication from Brian's group. Dee Dee, welcome to the program. You go right ahead.
Hello, Brian, and hello, Coy. Thanks a lot. And actually, Brian, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about your issue that I did take exception to. One is that you contend in your latest issue that the water demand is, that water use is actually going up, but you use as your baseline 2003, which is the lowest point in 30 years. It's actually considered by Gannett Fleming to be within the mandatory drought restrictions. And I wondered why you used 2003 and why did you not use the baseline that the plan was built upon?
Great. Good question, Dee Dee. And basically, the drought restrictions were lifted in 2002. So my view on this is let's take the year in which we as a community sort of hit the reset button on our views and expectations about how much water is going to be available to us. And I think in 2002, it was quite shocking when we got down to having 60 days of water left. So not being very, all I did basically was say, well, okay, the year after the drought, how much water have we used since then? And the trend is upward.
You must have known, Brian, that was in fact when the mandatory restrictions took effect. And in fact, I have a quote from Gannett Fleming saying that due to the mandatory restrictions, that they considered 2002 and 2003 inappropriate and irrelevant for projections. In fact, it was not until 2003 that we hit the lowest numbers for the drought. In fact, 2002 was about 20% higher.
November 2002 is when the drought restrictions were lifted.
But 2003, according to the water usage, was our lowest point. My question, though, is Gannett Fleming used through 2001. Why did you not use the numbers that Gannett Fleming used? Because that is what the demand is based on.
Well, Gannett Fleming went back to 1973 or something.
That's what I'm wondering. Why wouldn't we just go way back if we wanted a real accurate picture to answer the question about trends in water usage?
Yeah, so how far back do you go, Coy? Now, what Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, which Dee Dee Smith is involved with, that what they are advocating is you start at 1999, the year of the highest amount of water used, and you go forward from there. And anytime you pick the highest year, and Hawes Spencer did this in The Hook, it's always going to be downhill from there.
But why did you pick the lowest? In which case, actually, last year was only 2% higher than the very lowest point during those two drought years. And Gannett Fleming themselves, in the demand analysis that's on the Ravenna website, since 2002 and 2003 are the drought years.
Didi, you have another point of criticism in that study? Because I only got a couple minutes left.
Brian, I wondered when you put on your population graph, you use total population, and in fact, in the text next to it, you talk about the growth in Crozet, something you were just talking about. Crozet doesn't use the urban water. Why did you cite total population, and why did you particularly point out Crozet when, in fact, they're not part of the water supply plan?
Because they're on Beaver Creek, right?
Good question. The reason we pointed out Crozet and 29 North is those are the only two places in Albemarle County where master plans have been done. So we have a more accurate view looking forward of what the potential population could be. So that's an illustrative example of a place, as we were just saying. Right now it's got a population of 5,300. What we said in this issue is the maximum ultimate population could be 24,000. And what I found interesting was if you look at 29 North, which is in and on the urban water supply, so it's perhaps, I guess you would argue, a more direct example because they're on this urban system, is a similar leap in the ultimate potential population, where it could go from 24,000 people today to 94,750. So that's an illustrative way to look at this.
My point with the urban water supply.
Yeah, well, you know, you could cut back those numbers and say, let's only look at the people that are on urban water. Unfortunately, the VEC VEC and Weldon Cooper don't break out the data in a way that matches up with our planning areas.
Well, I'm sorry, Brian, but then you shouldn't have the graph altogether because you can't overlay a project that is only going to serve a small, or not small, but you know, a portion of our population and then overlay that on top of the total populations. It's misleading.
Didi, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We're going to have to continue this conversation at another time. I'm literally out of time. It's almost 6 o'clock, time for CBS News, local news and weather. Best seat in the house coming up in just a few minutes. This is not the last of this, nor is it the last of the red light cameras as well. We'll talk more about that and water in the future. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.